When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's only an hour. It's Jeff. It's Jordan. Jordan, CB says that you're always shaking your head when we're cross-talking with Chaos Theory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you just don't have anything in common with three married dudes.
I don't know about that. Usually, I'm like right now, I'm in the middle of there's a player on Texas's team who is upset with the creative team because apparently they didn't take enough photos of him. So he's asked me to send him what I got, which usually every time I go to a practice, this will happen with about 5 to 10 players.
Let me guess. I'm gonna take a wild guess.
I'm not telling y'all who it is.
No, I'm not asking for names. I'm gonna guess it's one of the newcomers that enrolled for spring semester.
This one actually isn't the one.
Really? Wow. I lost that bet.
But no, it's a pain in the ass because, like, when I was like in the peak of my photography, videography career, whatever you want to call it, usually what I do is I would just make like a link of all the photos and then send it to the kid and then be like, this is exactly how you save the photos. Mm-hmm. Because instead of downloading them, pretty much every kid will just screenshot it. And it destroys the resolution, makes me look bad. So, like, I just got tired of that shit. And, I mean, I still have, like, a Smug Mug account I use. So, if I'm on the road and need to pull, like, one of my old photos, I don't have to whip out my laptop and dig through external storages. I can just pull it from the cloud. It's really annoying having to take the photos from my computer to my phone and then cropping them because I know none of these kids know how to crop. So, a little time consuming, but I mean, I don't know. It keeps them happy.
It never fails, man. You're doing our photos now, but for years I did our photos from like the first practice or the first spring. It would never fail, including one member of the Texas defense who will be a starter this year. Never fails. I always get hit up. Hey man, can you send me those pictures you posted? Can I get the originals, or can you send me all the photos you took of me? Like, I'll do it.
Yeah, no.
I didn't create one of those accounts because the biggest mind F you can tell like a 19 or 20 year old is like, what's the best email address for you? You're like, oh, I don't use email. Well, I'm an old and I use email. So
yeah, it's. I don't know. Like it's funny. After I go to like big events or showcases, I always get to figure out like which players are refreshing their profile every single day. Because, like, for example, in Under Armour camp, I'll upload over 500 photos after, right? There'll probably be at least 100 different kids. I'll probably get 10 kids who hit me up within 24 hours of the photo going on their profile. And I'm just like, you care way too much about all of this if you are refreshing your profile that often.
Yeah.
Because some kids are repeat offenders, and it's like, in my book, that's a red flag. Like, the kids I can think of, I'm not going to name names, throw them under the bus, but, like, I can think of some kids from the 23 class that were like that. And, like, three of those dudes are in the portal right now. Like,
I will say most of the guys that have asked me for pictures, one I can think of wasn't a starter and I think transferred out, but the two that hit me up the most for pictures, one was a starter while he was at Texas. The other one, like I said, is a defensive starter this year. So here's what I want to do, Jordan. Let's talk about the spring game. You were down on the sidelines. I watched it from home this year. And I'll tell you what, man, usually by about middle of the third quarter of the spring game, I'm at that point, I'm usually checked out and I'm like, you know what? I'll pay attention, but I've got to write and I'll watch it on the replay and see what happens and make some notes there of some of the younger guys. And usually by that point, it's usually like walk-ons anyway that are playing. But man, the spring game kept my attention the whole time. And I know in 5 minutes, nobody's going to remember the score from that game, but it was a pretty damn entertaining spring game. And I think it just, I wrote this on the site. And by the way, shout out to Josh Pate for mentioning my piece of Hornets 24/7 last night on Late Kick. Appreciate the shout out, Josh. My biggest takeaway was it, and you and I always talk about this, it speaks to the quality of depth in the program, that the quality of play in a spring game, that we're able to talk about it, because as bland as everything was in conceptually, you were entertained just because of the caliber of athletes you had on the field. And I want to start with you, because everybody's talking about Arch, and rightfully so, but the biggest thing I came away impressed with, and I didn't see him play as a senior, you did. Trey Owens is a dude, and I don't necessarily know that I had that on my checklist of things to maybe check off by the end of spring practice, is the fact that, dude, this staff recruited a quarterback, a guy who, you know, us at 24/7, we bumped him to the unranked four-star category. But Trey Owens can play. You never know how it's going to work out for quarterbacks, but Texas has three. I think that AJ Milwee and Sark probably went to bed Saturday thinking, yep, we got three, and we could trust them at some point in their career to be the guy.
Yeah. Like you said, Arch Manning, obviously, with his name, no matter what he does, he's going to steal the headlines. But Trey Owens, man, he's a long time coming. A long, long, long time coming for Mr. Owens. I remember the first time I ever saw him in person was at a Baylor camp in 2022. Or no, it would have been, summer 2022, June of 2022.
So this was going into his junior year.
Yeah.
He was a rising junior.
And I remember, I think it's fine to say now, but I had really, really good sourcing with Baylor's quarterbacking department back in the day. And they brought in like seven 2024 quarterbacks to evaluate and throw that day. That was like the quarterback camp. So Baylor, they do they have like 10 camps each year.
Yeah.
But there's actually really four of them where they're actually evaluating the players, and it's not just like come get a free shirt.
Yeah.
Of those four camps, one of them is the RG3 camp where they have all the quarterbacks they're looking at come that day. And so Trey was there that day, and it was the main guys I'm remembering are him, Hoss Haney, who finished in the top 247, was at the All-American Bowl in San Antonio, signed with TCU out of Aledo. Marcos Davila, who I believe also finishes an unranked four-star, Midland Legacy, signed with Purdue, was actually committed to TCU for a couple months. And then, I can say it now. TCU dropped him whenever they hired Garrett Briles. And whenever that happened, they pivoted when he got lost.
Kendall Briles?
Or Kendall Briles, my bad.
You thinking you had Garrett Riley on the brain?
Yeah. Marcos Davila, he didn't fit with their offense ran. So they, went a separate way, went with Haas. But coming out of that day, I thought Marcos Davila was by far and away the best quarterback on the day. RG3 tweeted the same thing that day, but they offered both Trey and Marcos. When I talked to a source on the Baylor staff after the camp, I'm like, what do you think? What are your thoughts from those two guys? Obviously, it was clear those are the two you're focused on. And he's like, Trey Owens is by far and away the best quarterback here. And I was just like, did we watch the same thing?
Yeah.
Because like, I love Trey. He was not better than Marcos Davila that day.
Yeah.
And in RG3, I'll go and find the tweet if I have to. That was my first impression of Trey. I talked to him a little bit after. He kind of straight up told me that he was going to Baylor if no more offers were coming his way. At the time, SMU was kind of where he was, feeling a lot. But and he actually had some family that went to SMU as well.
And I think timeline's important here. This was before Arch committed to Texas, right?
Yeah. This would have been a couple weeks before Arch.
That's a very important thing to note.
Yeah. So he didn't even talk about – Texas wasn't even really in the mix at that point. And so as that summer went on, Baylor basically turned Trey Owens their number one quarterback.
Yeah.
So me and him kind of started developing, kind of a relationship. And then I started hearing from Hudson Standish probably around that September, because I remember I was at the Lake Belton Red Oak game that went into overtime when Hudson brought up at halftime that they were evaluating Trey Owens. And, you know, since they're having such a hard time trying to find a quarterback after Arch, that they were just going to pick an in-state kid and roll with him. And that Hudson felt that based off talking to his sources, it was going to be Trey Owens. At that point, nothing had been promised to me, but I was pretty confident myself that I'd be able to get the Horns 24/7 job. And so I kind of started, I turned it up with the relationship building, I guess, with Trey a little bit that fall. They end up offering in November. I hit him up and he's like, yeah, I'm I'm going to Texas pretty much. From that point on, it was pretty much all Texas. I believe he silented that December. He got the offer in November, I believe, and then posted, went public. I think January 12th was the date. It was sometime in January of 2023. Trey just went ahead and popped, got it over with. And I remember it was really interesting reading everyone's opinions.
January 11th, 2023.
Damn, I was close. I remember reading everyone's opinions in the Texas market because I was still in the Baylor market at that time. I had more in-person exposure to Trey Owens than anyone. I had more coaches' opinions on Trey Owens than anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went to read everyone's, you know, kind of opinions on what the Texas market viewed Trey Owens, I saw like half of the writers going with this bullshit lazy comp that he was Austin Novus at. And I think it just caused they saw this big frame white kid that was kind of raw and they thought would, you know, his development would go like that, where that is similar to what happened. But the only thing him and Austin Novus had really have in common is that they're white males and play quarterback. You know, they're very
the
different.
The old Tyrone Swoops, Vince Young comparisons.
Yeah. Like, what are we doing, you know? So I always liked Trey. The way I kind of viewed him, though, if I'm going to be completely honest, I was like, this is very much a three-star, almost a floor-setting take, except he's a quarterback. You're only taking one quarterback a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I wasn't over the moon with it. I understood how hard it was going to be for Sark in Texas to get a high profile 2024 quarterback. I was pretty content with the take. I liked it. I saw him a bunch in the spring of 2023, whether Under Armour, Elite 11, 7-on-7. And he was, you know, making improvements, but, wanted him to lose some weight. At Under Armour Dallas, I remember, I forgot who it was, someone brought it up, they're like, yo, this is my first time seeing Trey Owens. He's got some love handles on him. And it was like, yeah, he's kind of got the dad bod quarterback look going. And he ended up losing some weight as a senior, really stepped it up, took a lot of improvements in his game, pretty much spent that whole summer. If he wasn't visiting Texas, he was working out with J.P. Tillman, which is one of the best quarterback trainers in Houston. No doubt. Also works with DJ Lagway, amongst a bunch of other guys. But
Trey threw for over 3,300 yards in a really competitive district. 43 touchdowns, only three or four picks. And, you know, you need – I mean, I remember talking to – and I wrote this. There's a piece I wrote over the weekend that highlighted two guys. And one guy we'll talk about here in a second. I highlighted Trey Owens and Ryan Wingo. But I included a quote I got from A.J. Milwee at the Sugar Bowl. And he said that from the beginning, they really liked the competitiveness with Trey because they knew – look – the top two guys for Texas in that 24 class of quarterback were Dylan Raiola and Julian Sain. And I feel pretty comfortable saying if Texas didn't get Arch Manning, one of those two guys would be at Texas right now. But the minute Arch commits, it's like, all right, where are we going? Because it's not going to be Texas. And I think Sark and A.J. Mill, we knew like those guys aren't going to follow Arch. So it was going to have to take a guy that was really special and had some confidence about him and felt sure of himself that he could go in and not just fit in the room, but could push those guys a little bit. And, you know, A.J. Milwee told me, he said they love the competitiveness. They love the fact that he's got a chip on his shoulder. And the kind of whoa moment for me was he beats Katie in the area round. And then you realize, like, man, the last quarterback to beat Katie that early in the playoffs was Vince Young in 2001. Mm-hmm. So and then you start looking at the numbers and the growth, and it's like, dude, they got a guy. So, man, I tip my cap to the staff of making one hell of a quarterback eval in an insanely tough cycle, Jordan, as you pointed out, to get a quarterback. They could have just taken a guy and said, we're going to sit this cycle out and just take somebody for the sake of taking them. But again, man, they got a dude that can play. And Trey spent most of his spring game connecting with Ryan Wingo. And I see CB talking about it and said Rod B and Chance Mock both said Ryan Wingo reminds them of Roy Williams. Maybe it's a lazy comp, but I said Andre Johnson, and we're comparing him to maybe the most physically gifted receiver ever at Texas on top of a guy that's going into the Hall of Fame this summer. But that's not a direct comparison, not saying that's where Ryan Wingo's career is going to go. But Jordan, I like guys that have that, I've said it before, man, that kind of blockier-ish body type where they're thicker, they can hold up, they can play to contact a little bit better. But the thing that I was most impressed with, like with Ryan Wingo, and I know your coverage is going to be, again, it's going to be pretty bland in the spring game, but he got a release on Kobe Black and just left Kobe Black and Xavier Filsomee in the dust. And I don't think that's not a knock on either of those two guys. That's just like, dude, Ryan Wingo's got a gear that not a lot of dudes that are 6'2", 210 have.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll get into that in a sec. I kind of want to finish with Trey in the 2024 quarterbacks. So Rayola, Texas was in a really good spot early on for him. But like, I mean, y'all saw how his recruitment unfolded. He was committed to three different schools. Like that one was going to be rough, even if Texas never reeled in Arch. Mm-hmm. And then Julian saying, I wasn't there, but I was told by people who were there. But the last visit to Texas he took, which was for the elite camp in between his sophomore and junior year, because mm-hmm. Arch committed later that month, he straight up told the media he was going to Texas, Georgia, or Alabama. And that he was going to wait to make his decision based on what Arch picks. Like that he told the media that.
Yep.
And he waited till it was off record, apparently, so no one could put that in quotes or whatnot. But that's what Julian saying said. So, yeah, and then with Trey, look, I remember talking to Hudson. I didn't have really any sources at Texas when Trey first committed. But I remember talking to Hudson, kind of asking what the staff felt. And look, they did like the competitiveness, like you said, and they did like a lot of things about him. But I'm going to be completely honest with you, because the staff probably won't on this. They were not expecting Trey Owens to have the senior year and turn into the player he did.
Yeah,
and I wasn't either.
I don't think anybody did. Yeah.
Yeah. And the way it worked for Trey when he committed is everyone, including people at Cyfair I talked to, viewed him the way I talked about, where it's like, okay, Texas is going to sign a quarterback every year. It's going to be really tough. Let's go get this guy with a lot of traits who, you know, compared to the other takes, is going to have an uphill battle. That's how everyone saw it except mm-hmm. for Trey. Trey looked at it as, I'm like Quinn and Arch. Texas wants me for a reason. I'm going to go in there and take their jobs.
No doubt.
That's his mindset. That's why he plays like the way he plays. That's why he took down Katy for the first time they've lost in the playoffs that early since the BY did a decade earlier. So a lot to like about Trey. I do kind of feel bad for him just because everyone's getting super excited after the spring game. And it's like, this dude has got at least two more years before he can play, you know, just because, you know, he's got a way to turn, but he understands it. So I guess that's kind of the Trey Owens spiel. And well, with the
other thing to that is, you know, I think people would be quick to say, oh, man, Trey Owens must be ready to jump in the portal. Dude, he committed to Texas fully aware of what he was getting into. It's not like he showed up and be like, oh, man, Arch Manning's here. Oh, it's going to be a while before I see the field. No, dude, he knew what he was getting into. Unlike, like, the one guy that when he committed didn't sign up for what he got into was Malik Murphy. Because, like, when Malik committed to Texas, that was pre-Quinn Ewers. So by the time, you know, and then before Malik's true freshman year, you know, Arch commits that summer, and it's like, well, okay, I knew I had one guy. Now I got two, so now it's this big competition. So, but that's life with quarterbacks. But man, it's a testament to Sark and AJ Milwee. And I want to save this next topic for tomorrow, mm-hmm. the Keelan Russell, KJ Lacy debate. But that's why until I have a reason not to, I'm going to trust Sark and AJ Milwee on the quarterback evals.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And – you know, it's funny to think about how you brought up Malik Murphy. Like, if you really dumb it down, like, Malik Murphy and Jalen Milroe were almost the sacrifices for Texas having above average quarterback room You know what I mean? For the first time since I don't know when. But yeah, and I guess to talk about Wingo, like I thought it was hilarious because I talked to Hank after the spring game, and I'm just like, Wingo was more impressive in the spring game than he was any day in San Antonio. And I don't know. And I say San Antonio was in the week of the All-American Bowl back in January. Like, there wasn't a time that I'm sorry. I'm sorry if this is going to sound bad. I don't remember a time during that week in San Antonio where I looked at Wingo and was like, future first-round receiver. I just don't. Yeah. I don't remember it. And he was one of the higher-ranked guys there, so all of us were critiquing the shit out of him because he was one of the higher-ranked guys there.
Mm-hmm.
So we were probably being a little tougher than we should have, or at least I can speak for myself on that. But, yeah, I kind of came away from the All-American Bowl being like, I can't tell how good Wingo is because it's clear he's half-assing most of this. But when he turns it on, he's better than everyone else, it seems, but still really hard to get a good eval. That's why Colin Simmons, so many people had different takes on him, and it's because – to be completely honest with you, he didn't really care if it wasn't third and long.
Yeah.
Or at least his senior year. So, yeah, but with Wingo, though, man, great, great spring game. And it's funny, the release you were talking about with Kobe Black where he just murdered him off the line. I was like 50 yards behind them at the back of the end zone and was watching that through my viewfinder, like those two guys. Yeah. And I just saw him just get destroyed. And I mean, with Kobe, the biggest concern I've always had, maybe just the feet, not that they're necessarily slow, but like plays like that are why 24/7 had Kobe Black ranked as a safety for a decent majority of the cycle. And I'm not saying he's not a good corner. He's going to be a good corner. He already is a good corner.
Yeah.
And he's going to get, I think, some freshman playing time at corner, not just special teams. But yeah, I mean, there's going to be growing pains. And as high ranked as Kobe Black is, Wingo was ranked higher. And that's what those guys do. That's what practice is like. They're going to trade blows. So
Kobe will learn consistently. He didn't play much corner at Conley, right? Played more safety.
His main thing at Connolly was, we're going to give you the ball and you're going to help us win this damn game.
Yeah.
That was kind of it. So on defense, most of the time they would just stick him at corner. Sometimes they'd throw him at safety. But most of the time they'd stick him at corner. But like, you don't really get to practice or play the position when whatever side you line up, the other coach just tells the quarterback, no, don't throw over there. Because that's like the Jasper versus Connolly game I went to, Kobe Black side of the field got thrown to maybe once.
Yeah. In high school, you can get away with not jamming a guy and just relying on your recovery speed to run somebody down. Dude, if you give a guy like Ryan Wingo a free release, dude, it's over. You're toast. You're not recovering. So he'll learn. His biggest asset, man, is just his natural strength and his ability to press guys at the line of scrimmage. I think he's probably – not as tall, but the last guy that wore six, he can be a better version of what Ryan Watts was at that boundary corner. Like Ryan Watts was the perfect boundary corner in this defense. I think Kobe could be a better version of that because of the ball skills and the other tools that he's got.
Yeah, they have similar athletic profiles. I think Kobe is – I mean, it's hard because I never, got to evaluate or look at Ryan Watts when he was in high school at Little Elm. But I think Kobe's a more explosive athlete than him. But they do have a lot of similarities. I mean, that's why the whole time Texas recruited Kobe, it's, hey, you see Ryan Watts, that's what you're going to be.
Yeah.
So let's
stick in the secondary, Jordan, from Saturday. And, I think part of it is you got to understand you're going against a really good group of wide receivers and tight ends and skill guys. But at the same time, there was nothing I saw from the secondary that made me feel better about. I don't necessarily feel worse about the secondary in 2024, but there was nothing that made me feel better about it. And again, it's a one-day sample. I was expecting a little bit more.
Yeah. And I feel the same way a little bit. Have seen a lot of talk, or not necessarily digging on the DBs, but guys, it's important to remember it's a spring game. They want it to be powerful on the offense and high powered. But like the first thing I think of when I hear DBs and we're talking the spring game is Xavier Phillips to me just completely taking the wrong angle on that. Look, he's a freshman. He's going to make mistakes. He has a lot of time till he's going to be the starting safety at Texas. So that's fine. There's going to be growing pains. And if you knew anything about him as a prospect at McKinney, there are times when he tends to, I don't know if play too fast is the right word. But, you know, he can be better about just lining things up and taking an angle. Another thing that stuck out was kind of Mookie Taft just kind of tripping over himself as he tried to, because I think what had happened, I haven't been able to like really, really, really dive deep and watch back the recording, just, you know, some highlights. But I think what happened was he was just playing the ball and then didn't think to anticipate the receiver. And then the receiver came into his vision and he tried to plant his foot and he just missed and fell down. And
Jaden Blue, who ran a really nice route. That's really good.
And I know it's a spring game, but like that route Jay Blue made will make him money with the draft.
Dude,
you know, they are not running back. Running backs are not supposed to be able to do that.
No. And that's why the pony package can be so good for them, whether they use a tight end or not. Jaden Blue, I don't know. It's tough because he didn't play his senior year of high school and he's behind two backs that are in the NFL now, one that's going to be there at some point during the 3 days of the draft this weekend. But like, we just didn't get it had been a long time since we had gotten, pretty much since his junior year of high school, since we got a really good sample of him. His hands are much better than I anticipated. And you go back to the ball he caught in the Sugar Bowl, that again, if Texas wins that game, the two plays you're talking about that helped them get back are the big Whittington catch where he climbed the ladder and then that Jaden Blue kind of over the shoulder catch that got him into the red zone. And I think, again, that pony package can work so good because with Baxter and I thought it was interesting, man, you know, watching the TV copy, you heard Alex Loeb and Fozzie talking about how one guy that the offensive guys they talked to kept praising was CJ Baxter, because in some of these scrimmages, he's really unselfish. Like if you need him to block, he'll block. You need him to pass protect, he'll pass protect. And he's not going to complain about it and he's going to go full go. So, man, I just, you know, when you can look at that running back room, Jordan, and realize that, you know, we saw the top two, obviously, and we know what Baxter and Blue can do, and you feel like they're only going to get better this year. But we saw a little bit of, you know, Jarrett Gibson got a little bit of run. Christian Clark, I thought, looked explosive on a couple of the plays he had. Dude, Trey Weiser, everybody in the program is talking about how impressive of a spring Trey Weiser had. And like Savion Redd, who was your Wildcat quarterback last year, like we're not even talking about Savion Redd at this point. Now, I know for me, it's kind of beating a dead horse talking about how talented and deep that running back room is. But dude, I don't know everybody in college football's running back room. It's hard for me to imagine there's a running back room in the country that's as legitimately deep as this Texas room. Maybe not the tippy top guy. Some people probably have better, but those scholarship guys, dude, I can't imagine there's a better crew.
And the other thing that makes the Texas running back room so special and so different is a lot of these guys share similarities, but they're so different. They're so different. Like, no one plays like Trey Weisner in the running back room. No one else does. No one else plays like Jaden Blue does in the running back room. They're very unique. They do a good job of adding players that they don't have to fit their offense. Keelan Robinson was doing things only Keelan Robinson could do. They can't just go get someone else to do that. There are only so many Keelan Robinsons that come through the country every few years. Not that he's just like a game-changing player, but that type of running back with that type of speed that can do those different types of things, those are rare. So
he's a specialty guy. But he's a special, specialty guy.
Yeah. So
Keelan Robinson, for some old school Texas fans, what Texas got out of Keelan Robinson, if DJ Monroe would have been able to handle the playbook at Texas, that's basically what Keelan Robinson was, a dude that has legit speed and anywhere on the field he touches it, he can score.
Yeah. And so you have these guys who have all these differences, but – you know, you're also recruiting a lot of similarities and traits that are the same. Like when I went out to go see Jarrett Gibson in Nashville play Lipscomb Academy last August, I turned to Colin Kennedy after his touchdown run he had in the first quarter for like 40 or 50 something yards and was like, this is CJ Baxter. They're way different, but they are nearly identical in the way that they get the handoff straight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not trying to dance, go left or right. They're running straight. They're downhill runners, and they just get downhill right away. And like that's a similarity and a trait that obviously Tashard Choice covets.
Yeah.
Jordan Davison, we're not expecting him to end up in the class, but he has a very similar trait that I just mentioned where he's getting downhill ASAP.
Mm-hmm. The thing about CJ that was encouraging on Saturday, I know you're doing a lot of different things down there with the photo work, but he finished a couple runs.
He had some grown really man
physically,
runs.
Yeah. And I go back to the Iowa State game last year because remember, like, he was, you know, he got hurt and then it's kind of, the ankle injury against Bama. And, you know, you're kind of like, okay, he's playing behind Jonathan Brooks. But then that Iowa State game, I didn't know how he was going to respond. But man, the fourth quarter, like, you could really see, I think the fourth quarter of that game and then the Sugar Bowl when he rebounded from the fumble, those are the two games last year where you like, okay, it feels like we're watching CJ Baxter like grow up right in front of us. Like on the field, he's maturing and figuring out, all right, this isn't, you know, high school football in Florida anymore. I'm playing like big boy, legitimate, big time Division I football. And you could kind of see him start to figure it out and the game slow down. And I think now that the game has slowed down for both of those guys, you're seeing that explosiveness of CJ Baxter whenever he can read the hole, find it, boom, stick a foot in the ground and get vertical. And then Jaden Blue, it's just, man, smooth is just how I would describe Jaden Blue. Just so freaking smooth.
Oh, yeah. And I guess just real quick, I know the O-line coaches at Sauk, they've told me a lot about Cortavious Tisby or whatever, but I haven't been over to Sauk yet to – I mean, I've seen him in person. I went to like two Sauk games last year. But as far as recruiting goes, I don't think – I mean, Texas hasn't offered yet unless I completely miss that. And then Jason Bradford from Temple, my dog, doesn't have a Texas offer yet, Oklahoma State, Houston, Texas State, but he's verified at 6'2", 194, and has a +6 wingspan. Also starts on the varsity basketball team for Temple. And also has a young birthday. Hope he's 17 whenever he early enrolls. So a lot to love there. I love Jason Bradford. I'm the president of the Jason Bradford fan club. I was who found him. He plays with Juice. And he works with who I think is the best defensive back trainer in Texas, Bam Blake. I've seen him turn kids who were tripping over themselves into Selman Bridges because that's what Selman Bridges was. So I feel really good about Jason Bradford in the future. Him and Selman Bridges are very, very similar at these early stages. But, man, like when I first saw JB, that's what we call him, JB, in spring of last year, so that would have been spring of his sophomore year or spring of his freshman year. The difference between JB and Selman Bridges from the summer between their freshman and sophomore year was night and day. Like, I am so confident this kid is going to end up with two dozen offers, and I love him. This is one of my favorite prospects. We actually have our 2026 rankings are going to expand from the top 100 to a top 247 on Wednesday. When that happens, I'm going to have a ton of 2026 content this week up on our site, and I'm going to be writing about Jason Bradford a lot. Doesn't have a Texas offer yet, but I know him, his family, and, you know, his circle really well. I'm telling you right now, Texas is the school he wants to go to. So if they ever were to offer, it would get pretty interesting pretty quick. So,
hey, can I just put a message out there for anybody that wants to get a message to this Texas player? Will somebody tell Mo Blackwell that on his NIL, pro shop, man, if he can get a long sleeve T-shirt, I'll be all over it, man. I'm not a big guy on T-shirts. You said the Jason Bradford fan club. I forgot. I was like, man, I'm the president of the Mo Blackwell fan club, and I didn't have a T-shirt. But I tell you what, I'm not a big T-shirt fan, but he's got this Slim Reaper T-shirt with 37 and Roman numerals on the front. I may get that.
Pull up to one of the games rocking that in the press box.
That
hey, Mr. Step, how are you doing? He's like, Jeff, what happened to you?
You know what? If I got it, I would wear it to a practice. I'd wear it to an open practice.
Be like, hey, Mo, like,
what?
You see me?
You know, fault me for supporting the name, image, and likeness, contributing to that fund for one of your student athletes? Yeah. See, yeah. I got that trump card ready to go.
Yeah, no. I guess so. So back to the spring game. One guy I want to talk about.
Oh, hey, hold on. Since Jake brought him up right here, can I give a shout out to Reese Beecham?
By the way, if y'all want to go back and watch that play he scored on, if Reese Beauchamp doesn't catch that ball, I'm getting hit in the face by who threw it? It was one of the walk. It wasn't Cole Lord. It was Cole Lord?
It was Cole Lord, yeah.
I thought it was the other walk-on quarterback.
No, it was Cole Lord.
Okay, well, go back and watch that video. I'm sitting in the back of the end zone with kind of my legs out. I probably should have backed up a few more feet because I'm over the line. But that is me right there. And again, if Reese Beauchamp isn't there to catch that ball, I'm getting domed in the face.
Yeah, the pronunciation probably. CB is Beecham. He pronounces Beecham. But yeah, he was no, you're good. Alex and Fozzie mispronounced it on the broadcast, so you're good. Reese was at Vandegrift and kind of did a little bit of everything for Vandegrift, played some receiver, played some safety. And I mean, he had like some FCS offers, and I think maybe there were some G5s looking at him, but he wanted to walk on to Texas. So he's in that room, and it's good for him to see him catch a touchdown in the spring game. So shout out to Reese Beecham.
Yeah, no, that was wild because I'm at the back of the end zone taking photos, and I mean, y'all saw Bijan walking around, and whatever end zone that's the north end zone. Like everyone came down and lined up and was asking him for autographs, and all the stadium people were like, "Y'all can't line up on this railing," and no one listened, and it was just like begging Bijan for photos and stuff. And then I was like, "I need to get up and move." But then they were right there, and I'm like, I'm not about to move if, you know, the offense is in the red zone. So,
yeah, man, yeah. The two guys that I just see people react to them very warmly when they're back and they reciprocate, are Bijan and Mo Bamba. Like anytime I see Mo Bamba back, like Mo's probably wearing the cowboy hat or something. And, dude, people are like, oh, man, can I get a selfie? Can I get an autograph? Dude, he will stop and sign autographs and do selfies and the whole bit. So,
Kai Woods is transferring.
Oh, Kai Woods is hitting the portal.
Oh, damn. That one hurts. That's the true MVP of the Texas running back room.
Dude, I mean, Kai Woods, Colin Page, I mean, there are dudes, even the walk-ons in the running back room are like, man, you could see them. I'm not saying they would go to like Ohio State or Michigan and start, but dude, if they, you can't tell me that neither one of those guys could be a G5 running back somewhere.
Yeah, no, Kai Woods is the OG camp demon, absolute just a demon at camps. Yeah. But, yeah, and I guess Haley or whoever you say that. I mean, if any of y'all want to say what's up, say what's up. So, yeah, and then JT, yeah, he was down on the field wearing pink. I have this funny photo of him and Jeff Banks walking and Jeff Banks spitting. Yeah, I guess so. Just back to the spring game. A player who I was very, very happy with, very, very happy for his performance because I know behind the scenes he's been dealing with some rough injuries and he's in a loaded room, so it's hard to. But Colton Vosick, man.
For sure, Yeah.
I hate that a lot of those plays came because he was taking Andre Kojo to the woodshed. But still, man, like Vosick, it was like I was watching Westlake back in 2021. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was very fun getting to see him do his thing again. And a lot to like there. I think a lot of people were very pleased with his performance. And then Warren Roberson.
Well, hold on, real quick on Vosick. This is one of those games where the portal moves start to make sense for people, hopefully, that didn't get it before. Now it's real easy to see why Jamon Tapp and Billy Walden hit the portal.
Oh, yeah.
Because you didn't hear much about Vosick last year because he couldn't practice. So, because he was injured. So now he's healthy and you're like, oh, yeah, I forgot they recruited this guy who's one of the best edges in his class and can play. So, yeah, man, It was good. It was good to see Vasek. Alex January was another guy of the young guys that flashed a little bit.
I just can see.
I hope everybody came away with everything we talked about from the little bit you and I got to see, and I got to see a little bit more than you because I went to a few more of those open practice windows. But hopefully, what we said that we saw, what the secondhand reports that Chip reported, that we reported for the insider or scrimmage notes or whatever. I hope a lot of that jibed with what you saw on Saturday, just from the standpoint of you see where this team has talented depth and you see the very few holes or question marks that this team has going into the offseason, going into the summer.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you know, I talked to my dad about this. Like, it's wild looking at that spring game and being like, you know, it kind of felt like the starters played most of the time. But it wasn't the starters. It was the twos and threes who look like they could start, right?
Yeah.
That's new to Texas. That is a new thing. Mm-hmm. And it's depth. Like what I keep bringing up, depth is like the most underrated part of college football. And everyone is going to figure that out this fall when they figure out if you want to go to the Natty, you got to play an NFL schedule effectively.
Yeah.
So you're going to need depth. You're going to need to be able to go three deep if you have to at some positions because teams are going to get hurt. So really encouraged coming out of there that Texas will have a lot of depth at most positions.
Real quick on that, running back is that position for Texas. It was that position last year. Because you can make the argument that Texas might win a national championship if Jonathan Brooks doesn't get hurt, but they don't get there without C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue.
Oh, yeah. For sure. And one guy, I think he had a pretty quiet day. I'm on the field and the whole time I'm looking through a little viewfinder, so I'm not seeing everything. That's why I need to watch back a lot of stuff. One guy who I thought had a, you know, sneaky good day, Warren Roberson. Think any times I saw him get beat again though I was looking through my viewfinder. But I've always loved Warren Roberson. So was happy to see him doing well. Heard the great news.
He's one of the few DBs I saw that put himself in a position to contest passes.
Yeah.
To and force a contested catch.
If I remember correctly, wasn't it him who like tried to suplex Aaron Butler, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Cause I'm like, someone did that because I have photos of it, but I couldn't remember if it was him or someone else.
Yeah, it was Roberson.
Drew Makuba. I didn't really focus on him a ton. When I did, I thought he was pretty good coming down and stopping the run. Was cool seeing him in a Texas uniform. These are, I don't know what game these are from, but these are game worn gloves his little brother gave me because he used to just ship LBJ a box of gear all the time. So
do you know how much a Clemson fan would pay you for some game used Clemson gloves?
Well, if they were worn by Drew Makuba, they probably wouldn't, you know, want them, but. Yeah, I like Drew Makuba a lot.
I've got one game used item that I need to get framed up, but it's actually technically game worn. But it's pretty nice when you can get some of that stuff.
Got it. Let's see.
So the other things that I wanted to mention too was watching the offensive line. I thought that second group, that group Trey Owens was with. I know Kojo had a rough day dealing with Vasek, but I thought he and Trevor Goosby on there was the touchdown pass to Thatcher Milton where they got the penalty wrong because they called hands to the face initially, called it on, I guess, on Goosby. And I'm watching that play and I'm like, Goosby's holding Zena back and you see Zena get the hand up in Goosby's face. I thought Goosby did really well. And then Kojo just kind of ran to Celia Kana out of the play. And Trey Owens just stepped up to where there was a vacant area, which that was it. And he stepped up and throws the touchdown to Thatcher Milton. So yeah. I thought that second O-line did some good things. I thought, you know, the number one O-line, we didn't need to see those guys that much. But the one thing that stood out from anybody on the number one O-line, man, kind of reminded me of the Sugar Bowl. The one time where, you know, in the around the goal line where you really needed DJ Campbell to make a push. Dude, he made the push on that Cedric Baxter touchdown run. Like, he runs right behind DJ Campbell.
Oh, yeah. Or you're not going to be able to see me well. But, yeah, that is me on the photo CB tweeted. I'm sitting down right next to the dude with the Colt McCoy jersey on. But sorry, right tackle one, my money's on Cam Williams for sure. Yeah. And another thing that I talked to my dad about, it's funny you brought up the DJ Campbell push. If Cam Williams is going to start at right tackle, which pretty much everyone assumes he is, you have to believe that if they're on the 5-yard line, they're running behind the right side. Yeah. Nothing against Kelvin Banks, nothing against Aiden Connor, but you got to run behind those two dudes.
Yeah.
And another thing about Cam Williams, like there are people in Austin who think Texas is upgrading this season at right tackle. It's not a shot to Christian Jones, but they're like, that's how high some people on the staff feel about Cam Williams. He was great versus K-State.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, man. The one game we really saw him, the best thing about an offensive lineman when he's in there is if you don't notice him. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really notice Cam Williams during that K-State game. Went back and some of the stuff I rewatched, I was focusing just on him. I'm like, you know what? Oh, he wasn't like Orlando Pace out there, but he wasn't just having dudes run by him either.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of other guys in the spring game I thought
Jordan were solid. Washington, our guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great catch. Martin Nyblack had, I don't know, I kind of might have expected him to maybe get some more burn. But, I mean, I think that was the strategy probably, or at least that's kind of what I'm assuming. So how deep is the
lot of him? You didn't see a lot of him. You didn't see after the first couple of drives, you didn't see a ton of Gunnar Helm either. Yeah. Which is fine.
I'll tell you what, man, Jonte had a very complete game, it felt like. His second catch when he basically stacked Manny Muhammad and then came back with a comeback and just it was a 50-50 ball that he won. A great ball placement, I think. Quinn was the quarterback since it was like the first drive, I believe. But yeah, you know, I love seeing Jonte and Manny go at it. They've been going at it since they were born, pretty much. They grew up together. So I always love seeing that matchup. But yeah, I mean, that's great on great right there. And Jonte showed off strong hands. He left the ground for the ball too, I'm pretty sure. Man, a lot to like from Jonte. Matthew Golden kind of had a quiet day.
Mm-hmm. Isaiah Bond had the drops early and then the big touchdown at the end for March.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, Matt Golden might have had two drops. One of them was he thought the safety was going to kill him, so he took his eye off the ball. But, I mean, it was Michael Taft jogging over in a spring game. He wasn't going to hurt him. And then the other one was he was running like a slant or in or across the middle, and I think there's just too much mustard on it or could have been placed better or something. But, I mean, it did bounce off his hand, so probably could have caught it. Bond obviously was good. He got the touchdown at the end. I would like to think that Isaiah Bond should be beating Gavin Holmes pretty consistently, considering he's Isaiah Bond and is a projected first round pick next year.
Yeah.
But part of that was, I mean, whenever Holmes went to punch, he whiffed. And then Bond also hooked his face mask a little. So
that's why I hope when we talk about the corners, like I don't worry about Manny Muhammad at this point. I saw enough last year.
Yeah, like we're not even talking about Manny Muhammad. There.
Yeah. The guy that I really hope gets it together and puts it together this year is Terrence Brooks, because you know, Gavin Holmes, I thought had a pretty he did give up the one touchdown, but I thought competed and fought. It's just compared to Brooks, Gavin Holmes just has some physical limitations that Terrence Brooks doesn't, but it seems like you get more consistent play. It's less boom or bust with Gavin Holmes than it is with Brooks.
Yeah.
So that's why that's still a competition. It's just you like the physical ability of Terrence Brooks, but you're getting more consistent play, it seems like, from Gavin Holmes. We even heard about Gavin Holmes coming out of – it was one of the scrimmages, either the first scrimmage or the second scrimmage, where I was like, hey, Gavin Holmes is – competing for a job. So, and it's with Terrence Brooks, it's not with Manny Muhammad.
Yeah. DeAndre Moore, man, I'm gonna be completely honest with y'all, I was not a huge fan of DeAndre Moore at all.
You've made that very clear to me in our off-air conversations.
just nothing to do with him. Love the kid, but just like as a high school prospect, like if you're gonna be a guy who's ranked pretty highly, and you're on a team like St. John Bosco or Mater Dei or whatnot, where there are 30 other dudes ranked just as high, you have to do a lot to earn my respect. And I mean, he also went to like 3 or 4 different high schools during high school. And he no-showed at the All-American Bowl. But yeah, I didn't really know what to think of him at Texas, but he has done more, or not more. He's further ahead than I would have ever expected. I'll put it that way. And was very pleased with how he did at the spring game. And I didn't even see what exactly happened with Terrence Brooks or was Derek Williams, I'd say. Like, what? Yeah. What even happened there? I was in the corner of the end zone, but I was talking to Corey Mose, and then you look up and there's just a ball coming through the air.
It looked like it was just a switch route and just a busted coverage.
Okay, got it.
Which has been too often the case for the secondary, where you get busted routes, busted coverages on switch routes.
Was it just miscommunication, passing them off to the safety, or was there not as?
Okay. Yeah, that's been kind of a deal with this secondary, going back to really, going back to year two. And I don't know if you remember, it reminded me of in the TCU game where, gosh, who was the corner on that side? It might have been Terrence Brooks, or maybe it was just, I don't know. I think it was Terrence Brooks. But anyway, they had a miscommunication where Anthony Cook is the safety on that side, and Austin's running wide open. Yeah. Like, it's almost like as a receiver, you're like, man, I hope I don't drop this because I'm wide open. And it was just a busted coverage.
There's been a lot of games I've gotten frustrated during the Sark era. That's probably number one, just because wasn't that TCU's only touchdown?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Texas's only touchdown was
the Jahdae
Barron scoop and score.
No, TCU had 2 touchdowns. They had Dez, thank you for pointing out, you said it was cover 3. There was no safety. Derek Williams was the deep safety. I know that.
Got it.
Yeah, there was we're talking about the TCU game. There was the Quentin Johnston touchdown at the end. Mm-hmm. And Kendra Miller had like a 75-yard touchdown run.
Yeah. Yeah, that is right. That's right.
Because that was pretty much all TCU got in the run game all night, was that Kendra Miller run. And then, Jadae had the fumble return.
Yeah. Hey, Dez, that is true. That is like that is very similar play.
Yeah. And look, man, you're just, some plays are just really good. Everybody's got plays that beats that are just really good for certain coverages. You got your cover 4 beaters, your cover 3 beaters, your man beaters, whatever. And if you just dial it up at the right time, it's gonna work.
Yeah. What were your thoughts? I didn't. The backup offensive linemen don't have too strong of opinions, really. Just besides kind of Vosick, taking Kojo to the woodshed. But like Trevor Goosby, he didn't seem too bad at all. Though the few snaps I tried to focus in on him, and I really tried to focus in on him just because, man, within a month of Trevor Goosby showing up at Texas, sources were just like, this is who we want to replace Kelvin Banks.
Yeah.
Not this is who will, this is who we want.
Yeah.
So
I felt like in pass protection, the O-line period, other than, Kojo having a day he'd probably like to forget against Vosick, I thought they did good. I thought they held up really well in pass protection. You know, like you said, spring game's not really going to be a showcase for the run game. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't. The one time where you really wanted to see them, put their hand in the dirt, fire off, and get a push was that goal line run by CJ Baxter. But I thought they were fine, man. The number that Alex and Fozzie mentioned on the broadcast, and by the way, I thought both those guys did a good job for the last football broadcast on LHN. Shout out both those guys, good dudes, Alex Lowe and Fozzie Whitaker. But I thought that for the most part, that second offensive line did well. They were talking about Kyle Flood saying like seven is the magic number of starting caliber guys that he feels he's got right now or that wants to have. I feel he's going to have at least that. Because, you know,
who's
you got
seven besides Neto's six. Who's seven? Did he say
Cole Hudson? It's got to be
Cole
Hudson.
True. I completely forgot about him.
No, and then you wonder, like, okay, what would your backup center plan be? Like, is Hayden Connor far long enough if something were to happen to Jake Majors, or, you know, what would you do there? I think that's why they worked with Hayden Connor so much at center, because the plan then would be, all right, put Hayden in center and you slide Neto in at left guard, and hopefully you just keep on rocking and rolling. But no, I thought that second O-line was good, man. I mean, look, what I like the most about that group, Jordan, is they've cross-trained a lot of those guys, right? Like Kojo's worked right and left tackle. The only guys that have really been in the same spot is Trevor Goosby's been at left tackle, and I don't think anywhere else. And Connor Robertson and Daniel Cruz have been at center, and I don't think anywhere else.
Okay. Am I absolutely tripping, or did Kojo also – didn't he also line up at guard during the spring game? Am I wrong?
He might have. I know Malik Ogbo was guard. Jaden Chapman has worked, I think, both tackle spots and both guard spots those first 2 years. So the fact that you've got depth in terms of quality, well, in terms of quantity – but you're also, Kyle Flush, trying to manufacture depth in terms of quality, where it's not necessarily the backup right tackle is going to be the next guy up. No, I want my number six offensive lineman, and here's how we can make it happen. So they're cross-training guys and just trying to figure out, hey, if you need to go down different combinations, here's what you would do. Because, again, I pointed it out earlier, and I think I'll continue to point it out. Other than Jake Majors and Connor Robertson, I thought played well in the OU game last year. Other than that, and the Baylor game when Hudson got hurt and DJ Campbell had to finish it, they've been extremely fortunate. And again, the deal we talked about earlier with Cam Williams and Christian Jones, they've been extremely fortunate the last 2 years with O-line injuries.
Oh, yeah. You
know, other than Cam needing to start for Christian Jones, that what would that be? 20? That'd be 20. Hold on. They played, 13 games? 14. So I guess 26 of the last 27 games, they've used the same offensive line combination that they started with. The only change was Cam Williams for Christian Jones. And I guess if you want to get technical, it would be Connor Robinson for Jake Major since Jake got hurt on like the third play of the game. But yeah, I've been impressed and pleased with what Kyle Flood has done is an understatement, as BK joins us, compared to Herb and.
Yeah, so I got to talk about Kojo just for a sec. People are going to say what they say because of Wasik, but like, do you know how many people have forgotten what Kojo's age is? Like, did everyone forget he was 16 when he early enrolled at Texas last year and that he's 17? Like, there are players Texas is recruiting in the 2025 class that are older than Kojo. And Kojo has been at Texas for over a year. Like, think about that. Seriously, think about that. And look, he's bigger than a shit brick house. He's 6'7", 300 plus pounds, right? He was even bigger out of high school. He's cut down some weight. It's still in the process of reshaping his body. But it was always going to be a long road for Kojo. And that's fine. That's just fine. Because like you said, 26 of the last 27 games have been the same five guys in the O-lineman. There's a lot of time for him left before it's ever going to be, you know, his name getting called on.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to have to play. So,
hopefully, knock on wood.
Yeah, so I'm not worried about Kojo. In the Vosick and Sorrell stuff, it's funny. But, like, yeah, Sorrell, for this season at least. And then what else did I want to talk about? With the secondary and defense, yeah, like that was 1,000% vanilla. You're not going to do exotic blitz packages and stuff whenever you can't have contact with the quarterback. And it's also the spring game. You're not trying to show off.
Well, covering guys is apparently exotic to this secondary. I didn't see much of that on Saturday, so I guess that's too advanced or too complex for this current iteration of the Texas football team, guys.
Yeah, I don't know, BK. Part of it for me is, I think part of it is if you have Jadae Barron out there, it's a lot easier to mix and match and do some things because then Gilbo's with the twos and Austin Jordan's with your threes and whatever. But I didn't anticipate. I guess if there's anything I'm disappointed about, it's that Terrence Brooks and Gavin Holmes look like they're in a position battle. And I would have wanted Terrence Brooks to have won that job, wrapped that thing up by now. But the fact that we're talking about it coming out of the spring, I just think Terrence Brooks is too physically gifted, too talented to not be a frontline starter for this defense.
Yeah, y'all are closer to the team than I am, but I have been questioning Terrence Brooks all throughout the course of the spring. Nothing personal, obviously, but like just what I saw from him last year, people just anointed him as like the number two corner and like, oh, he's going to be a really good part of this team this year. And it's like, he wasn't horrible last season, but he didn't do enough to where I like feel good about Terrence Brooks being a regular starter on the outside for this Texas defense. And nothing I saw on Saturday makes me feel a whole hell of a lot better about that either.
Yeah, the play we were talking about earlier, I don't know if you caught it, but like the plays Brooks gives up, it's the kind of like mental mistakes that get you beat. The plays where Gavin Holmes gets beat, it's just because he's got physical limitations. Like Jordan was talking about it. You know, he tried to jam Isaiah Bond and whiffed, and there aren't many corners in the country that if you're trailing Isaiah Bond, you're going to catch him in a foot race.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah. So I don't know, man. It's like Bucky and I were talking about it this morning, Jordan. You know, if the secondary was great last year and then Saturday happened, then it's no big deal. It's just a spring game, whatever. But because the secondary was bad and you have the same coaches and then that happened, it's like, shit. Are we going to be having the exact same conversations this fall that we had last fall? Because right now it sure feels like the answer is yes.
Well, I don't know. Here's where I am, BK. Like, I told Jordan this, I don't feel worse about the secondary, but I don't feel better.
Yeah.
You know, nothing happened on Saturday that gives me confidence in that group that it's going to just suddenly significantly turn around. Maybe it does. Maybe it's just Jadae Barron's that important to the secondary, but I don't know. It is a referendum year on Terry Joseph and Blake Gideon. Go ahead, Jordan. You got something?
Yeah, I just Jadae changes the game when he's out there and when he's actually healthy, because the last half of the season he was not healthy and played through injuries. And that's part of why his draft grade suffered and why he's coming back, is because he played through injuries and had some bad tape. But yeah, I mean, he changes the game when he's on the field. Another thing that, like, they're not really dragging the secondary through the mud, but like the things that are being said, like, are we forgetting that Texas has two quarterbacks who would start on most SEC teams, if not all?
Yeah.
Are we forgetting that they have multiple receivers who have the ability to go in the first round?
You know? It's got to be taken into account. Yeah.
So it's like, if these are the dudes they're going against every day and they're getting beat by these dudes every day, you don't want that, but I'm okay with that. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I forgot who said it at Alabama. But one of their like top players from the Nick Saban era, I remember in this podcast, I forgot. I think it might have been he's with the Jets, Quentin
Williams.
Yeah, I think it was a podcast or something. He said where he's like, the hardest games were Sunday through Friday.
Yeah,
in practice, it's the same thing with Texas, and that's going to be the best receiver core they play all year, and they've been playing them every day since the spring started. So. Look, I get the concerns of the secondary. We also got to talk about how the pass rush has to be better this year.
Des Garrett mentions it right here, too. Like, because of the scrimmage format, like, there is no pass rush.
Yeah. And not only do they need the pass rush to be better, but, like, it is better. It's going to be better. They brought in guys from the portal. Obviously, Colin Simmons will have some immediate help. But, yeah, I mean, the front seven will be better. The defense as a whole, I feel very strongly, will be a better unit than it was last year. So
the very few plays where it was truly ones-on-ones, was that first drive Quinn had. And what happened? Ethan Burke pops a ball in the air, and Alfred Collins gets a defensive touchdown.
Yep. So. I think we have a quarterback controversy in Austin Fellas.
No, here we go.
Quinn Ewers.
I'd kick you swearing nuts if you were right in front of me just for doing the bit. Because I love bits. You know I love a good bit. That's not a good bit. That's a bad bit.
Quinn Sims and Arch Applewhite.
I'm telling you, and if anybody in the chat, anybody on the Coded Text line can back me up on this, if you were in this town when Sims Applewhite was going on, it was like, thank God that quarterback battle did not take place in a social media time.
Oh, because my goodness. Can you imagine that? Oh, my Lord.
Was, I mean, seriously.
Holy smoke.
The ad money that was sold at the Zone at the time, dude, I bet there's no telling how rich your Bucky Godbold is right now for Sims Applewhite.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I had a feeling when that game started, when Sark said that it was going to be very limited Quinn Ewers and, you know, a pretty good abundance of Arch Manning, I kind of figured that we were going to end up where we are right now. And again, I mean, let's not get into quarterback controversies. I mean, it was a good time to showcase Arch. And I love what you guys are talking about when we talk about the secondary. I mean, you're getting torched by a really good wide receiver core and good quarterback room. So, yeah, I'm concerned, but I think it's going to be okay.
Sark totally effed Quinn Ewers on Saturday. Can we all agree?
Oh.
By only playing Quinn Ewers two series against that secondary and letting Arch Manning play that much against that. And they threw it way more than they ran it, too. So it's like you know, Quinn had a pick six on like a second throw. And I mean, I love Quinn. He's QB1. Don't misconstrue my words here. But like the fact that Quinn, in a short amount of time, and Arch just drive after drive was leading Texas down the field and had all these deep bombs, too. It's like, Quinn Sark did not make life any easier on Quinn Ewers, and now he's going to have to answer about 50 more Arch Manning questions every time he gets in front of a microphone because of that.
The one thing that this did, which by the way, during the game broadcast, I thought it was funny. Like, I forget who the sideline reporter was, but they did an in-game interview with Quinn, and the second question that Quinn got was, "So, what do you think about Arch's progress?" And those guys are those guys are cool, you know. Like Quinn Arch had the quarterbacks over at over for a family dinner at his parents' house, or I think it was his parents' house for the Sugar Bowl last year. Those guys are cool. But you could tell Quinn was like, hey, can we talk about like spring ball or something first?
Yeah. Let's talk about the crowd.
Let's talk about anything else. He's out the way. But hey, this horse crap that some people were spewing about, oh, he'd only be a three-star prospect if his last name wasn't Manning. Can we just bury that for forever, because it's clearly not the case at this point. Manning can play.
Y'all get a kick out of this. One of my good buddies is an OU grad, and he's like, you guys think they had that first defensive breakdown intentionally to make Arch look good so he could get into a rhythm early on? And I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is the spin zone now, Jordan, on Arch Manning.
Dog, like the amount of just people on Twitter that are like, okay, you know, it looks like Texas actually has himself a Manning. This guy's good. It's like, well, dude, he was only the number one player in the country.
Yeah.
But all of y'all said he wasn't. And now y'all are like, oh, he's like, pick a side and stay there. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on, man. And man, I kept my mouth shut that whole time. But like, if you're going to project the NFL draft and there's a Manning that can throw the ball the way he can throw the ball like all of his uncles, you're out of your mind if that's not the number one player. No. You know what I mean? It's an easy choice.
It makes sense why Arch is so good. BK, you know this. I mean, Arch is Cooper's son.
Mm.
We all know. Cooper didn't have that injury.
Best athlete.
Best Manning of them all.
Best one of them all. Yep.
God dang. Yep.
Not about it.
What could have been?
That's a bit I'm all about. I'm all about the Cooper would have been better than Peyton or Eli.
There's no question. There's no doubt in my mind.
What does Cooper do? He's made money somehow. You know, is that what we got to do? We got to sweet talk it to get a sponsorship?
That's a good idea.
I'm just going to come on Twitter. Cooper Manning would have been the best Manning. And everyone else is just like, what are you talking about?
I think he's like a business consultant / investor, basically.
Yeah. Need to figure out what these business interests Cooper Manning has in the greater Austin area.
We got to get Live Golf and Cooper Manning in as sponsors. And then, boys, we are set.
We are in a good place when that happens right there with those two guys.
Awesome. Rodney, BK, we'll leave you two guys to it. We'll be back to do it tomorrow, man.
Yeah. Beautiful. And if you want to get over to Horns 24/7 for the Stampede this morning, Hank and I did our class predictions for the 2025 recruiting class. So if you want to see that, go check it out. It's a VIP story. So got to have a membership or get one. We're actually running 50% off subs right now.
Yes, sir. So
you want 50% off for a year? Go check us out. And yeah, go check out our class predictions. And I know today is mostly spring game. Tomorrow we're going to talk a ton of recruiting. So feel free to join us tomorrow as well. But I'll see y'all tomorrow.
Beautiful. Great job, guys.
Sir, see ya.